Hi folks, Joe Stagner from Microsoft here, and in this video, we're going to take a look at the ASP.NET membership system from the perspective of adding new users to the membership repository in our web application. Let's begin by creating a new project. We'll select the ASP.NET web application template, and we'll just give this a name, create new users, click OK, and Visual Studio will generate a website for us from that default template. Now, if you're unfamiliar with the default template, you may not realize that the account folder has restricted access. So if we open the web.config file, you note here that unauthenticated users are denied from accessing resources in the account folder except the ones that are specified in location elements. So we're going to create a new page that we want to be accessible by anonymous users. So let's call that add user. And that's the name we're going to create a new page as. Now, you'll notice here that there's this register.aspx page, and it is a pre-built form that allows us to register new users on our website. We're going to examine this momentarily, but before we do that, I want to create the add user page so that we can have a look at the create user wizard in its simplest implementation. So here let's say add new web form using master page. We'll use the name addUser.aspx so we can access it as unauthenticated users to our web application. And now here in the contents section of addUser.aspx, let's scroll down in the Visual Studio toolbox and find the login tools collection, and let's grab the create user wizard and drop an instance of it on our page. So you can see all we've done is drop it on the page. We haven't changed anything. Let's switch back into design mode. Now note here, this is very similar in some respects to what we see in the register page that is generated by default. Let's go ahead and run this. Now I want to point something out here. Notice this security question, security answer. If we run the page, we see that our form appears. Notice security question and security answer are missing. So the first thing I want you to understand about how this control works is that if we go back into the web.config file for the application, and if we scroll down and we find this membership entry, what you'll see here is that the provider is configured with quite a selection of options. Now, notice here's enable password retrieval, enable password reset, set the maximum invalid attempts. One of these settings is requires question and answer. You can set other things like requires unique email. So these settings specify some of the configuration for the membership implementation in this specific web application. So we would probably set a fair number of these on. I would require unique email address, for example. I would perhaps add a level of security, minimum required non-alphanumeric characters. Maybe I'd set that equal to 1. Let's specifically set requires question and answer equal to true. Now let's save our web.config file and let's run add user again. And note that the security question and answer have appeared. Now I'll create account. I can create user. Notice no programming at this point. All we've done is, the only thing we did to the control was we added the setting to require that security question and answer. And notice here it says complete, your account has been successfully created. If I click continue, you'll note also that the control has automatically logged us in. Right, so that's the username we specified. We've automatically been logged in because that's the default behavior of the control. So that's the simplest way. However, one of the things to note about this this create new wizard control is that it is highly configurable. You can add steps. You can change all of the look and feel. So let's go ahead now and look at the register ASPX page and how it implements a customized version of this create user control. So looking here at the register.aspx page that's generated from the default web forms template, you can see that the appearance of this instance of the create user wizard is quite different than the appearance of the instance that we created manually. Not only is the formatting different, but as you can see here and here, there's some form field validation taking place in this use of the create user wizard. So let's hop back into the page that we just created, adduser.aspx, and our default drag and drop instance of the create user wizard. We just refresh our memory relative to the source or the markup that is generated when we drop that control in the page. Notice here we have this wizard steps collection, this element, and inside there are two steps: create user wizard step and complete wizard step. Now in our case, this is all we need because we're just providing a form for the user to enter the appropriate information, and we're creating that new user. And then the complete user wizard step normally is used to just display a message that the user was successfully created. But we can add steps by virtue of the task list. So if we look here at the create user wizard instance, and if we notice here, this little arrow box expands to display a list of tasks for the create user wizard. One of them is to add and remove wizard steps. Now, think about some of the things that we might do by adding additional steps to the create user process. So this, we can actually implement sort of a workflow here in the create user wizard process. And we might, for example, add a profile so that when the user registers, we want them to fill out additional information that's not necessary to create the account, but that is a profile specific to that user. So things like your full name and address, phone number, your experience, or anything that's specific to the members of the web application that we're building. There are other things we might add as steps as well. We might add a step that gives them the opportunity to upgrade to a paid premium membership. Or perhaps we have some sort of a sponsorship and we want to add a create user wizard step to show the user that's registering some special offer from our sponsor or what have you. So adding the create user wizard steps can be really useful depending on the specifics of our application. We can, of course, auto format. So by default, again, if we look at the markup, notice that we don't see definition for any of this default markup. We don't have text boxes, we don't have labels, what have you. But if we go into auto format, we can select an existing format. So let's choose the professional look, which matches the default template. If I click on OK, notice now that our instance on our page has that visual aesthetics applied. Now if we go and look at the markup, we still have the same number of user steps, but notice all of the styling that's in place. So we have a continue button style, a create user button style, title text style, etc. Header style, navigation button style. So we've just added some styling. And notice all of this is very detailed. So we have really an extreme amount of control over both the aesthetics as well as the behavior of the create user wizard. If we go back into design view and look at the task list again, notice that we can, of course, add and move steps. We can convert to specific templates that are built into the wizard. We can administer the website right from here, edit the templates. One of the things that we might do is customize one of the existing steps. So for example, this is our create user step right here. that's currently displayed. What if we want to change that? So I could say, click on Customize, Create User, Step. Notice now I can select each of the controls here inside the Create User wizard, and I can specifically modify them. Right, so maybe I want to change that label, or I want to make these text boxes larger, or change the message, or really anything that I want. I can do that. If we then go look at the source view, what we can now see is that because by way of that that task list, we said we want to customize this step. Notice now that we have inside the step, we have this content template and a table, all of the TDs and the TRs. And here we have the actual ASP.NET text box control, which we can change, the required field validator. So this takes us all the way down to the detailed code that we can customize in any way that we want, attaching either client or server-side behaviors. So as you can see, there's a great level of detail that's available when using and configuring the Create User wizard. Now, a couple of other things that we might want to look at. For example, one of the things that I like to do is I like to have control over the state of a newly created user. Right? So if we look at the properties window for the Create User wizard, there are a couple of things to note here. First is, of course, look at all of these styles. You can style everything, and you can do that by manually specifying the style, or you could use a style sheet CSS class that you've added. Here you can see all of the error messages, so here you can have control in the properties window over all of the error messages. You can add links and URLs to do things like point to help, what are the requirements, for example, for a complex password that might be implemented in your particular security scenario. But there are a couple of behaviors that I tend to like to set. Notice disable created user. So what this means is that it's set to false by default, and that means that when the user is created, the user is created as an active user. They are enabled in the database. Well, sometimes I like to set my membership up so that when a new user is created, they're disabled by default, and I'm going to implement some sort of a user validation process. Maybe it's that I send them an email with a unique ID and they have to click on a link to activate themselves to make sure that their email address is valid. Sometimes I want an administrative step where an administrator will actually go in and have to review that submission to become a user on the website and activate that user. So I might want to set disable created user equal to true. What that means is that by default, once they've registered, they're disabled and waiting for activation, and they can't log in until that state has been changed. If we do this, by the way, there's another property that we want to address, and that is the login created user. It's true by default. So it doesn't make much sense to create the user as disabled but log them in automatically. So if that's the case, disabling the newly created user, I probably want to prevent them from being automatically logged in. And you can peruse all of these properties at your leisure. Note however, that when I change those settings, these are simply attributes in the definition of the Create User wizard instance, right? So I can do them either in the properties window, or I can add them here in the markup, and of course there's full IntelliSense support. Another thing that we'll note here in the properties window, however, is if we switch to design view, we can also look at all of the events that are available for programming. So note here that there's quite a collection. Let's switch back over to the register.aspx page and now select the control. And let's look at it. its events, and you'll notice that we have an event handler defined for created user. We'll go look at that event handler in a moment. What it does is basically redirects the user back to wherever it was that they came from when they needed to register so that they could log in. But notice all of the different entry points in the workflow where we can add our own custom event handler logic. Active step change, the user clicked cancel. Maybe when they click the cancel button, we want to prompt them, hey, why did you decide not to register? There was an error, maybe we want to do something specific. Notice here, created user, the one that's implemented by default in the register.aspx page, this event fires after the user's already been created. Maybe we want to run some code before that happens, while the user is being created. So we have a rich collection of properties that we can attach event handlers to customize the business logic of creating a new user in our specific application. If we look at the code behind, you can see here we have that register user dot underscore created user, and here all they're doing is setting an auth cookie and then figuring out whether there is a continue URL and redirecting there. So just a little bit of logic that if you've worked with the default template, you can peruse the pages, but then when you request a protected resource, if you can't log in because you haven't created a user yet, then you create a user and you'll automatically get redirected after you log in back to wherever it was that you started. So just a little hook in the created user event handler. So hopefully that gives you just a quick introduction to how configurable the create user wizard is, but if you choose not to use the control, that's fine too. Everything that we're looking at here, we can do programmatically. So now let's go ahead and look at how things might look if we didn't want to use the create user wizard control, but in fact we just wanted to create our own ASP.NET page and manually write the code so that we can have even a greater level of detailed control over the process of registration. So I've removed the create user wizard control from our addUser.aspx page, and here we're going to manually implement a form that the user will submit to request their account creation. So we would do this just as we would anything else. We could start by saying, let's wrap this form in a div. I could set its width equal to, let's say, 600 pixels. Right, you get the idea. And then inside that div, I could specify that we're going to now create a field set. And we could specify a legend. Right. Hopefully this is all second nature to you. Now, next we would specify all of the fields that we would require the user to enter data into in order to request that their account be created. Now, you can do layout any way that you like. For this type of forms-based layout, I use tables because I think the behavior, I consider a form to be tabular data. You might use just pure CSS and divs with float statements, etc. In my case, I prefer to use a table for laying out my form. And so here we would create a table. Then for each field, we would create a table row. And then we would create, in my case, I create 3 TDs. Oops. And I do this once for each field of entry. So this is going to be the text. So I might say here, username. However, I want this to be TD to be text aligned to the right, and then this second TD is just some amount of space. In my case, I'll make it one non-breaking space, and then here I specify an alignment equal to left, which I know is redundant, but I like self-documenting markup. And then here is where that text box will go. So I'll go into Visual Studio's Toolbox, and in the Standards collection, I'll go find my text box control, drop an instance into that TD. So give it a better name. What do I want to call it? So, TB username. And also here, I can add validation for the fields that are being entered. So I would do that, go down into the Visual Studio Toolbox, find the Validation Tool tab, and grab the validator that makes sense. So I could start with a required field validator, for example, and name this required field validator username. I can specify some the specific error message. I of course have to tell it which control to validate, so I could do that by finding the control to validate field here, and in my case it's going to be TB username. And the error message, instead of required field validator, I want to say something more specific, like the username field is required. Alright, so right, you get the idea. Right, now obviously this is a validator field, so that won't be displayed by default. So I need to build this entire form for all of the fields that I want the user to enter before we submit to create their new user account. So rather than you have to watch me create this whole table, I'm going to quickly go away, grab some code and paste it in here, and then I'll be back and we'll explain what the full form does. So here I have the form implemented in its entirety, but let's go and look at the markup, because although most of it will be obvious from the little bit of coding that we just did, there are a couple of tricks here that I want to point out. So the first is, you'll notice here's our text box for TB username, as we just saw, the required field validator, the control to validate. Now a couple things here. So I've customized our error message. I've done two other things here. One is I've added a tooltip. And the tooltip is the full explanation. The error message is simply a little graphic and a one-word indicator, required. And the reason that I do this is that these validator messages take up space even if they're not displayed. So it can cause a little bit of havoc with markup, but there's a couple of easy ways to get around it. This is one of the first. So when we run this, if there's a validation error, I'll get this little double arrow and required. But if I hover over that, then I'll get the full message, username is a required field. So that's one of the little tricks that I've done. You'll also notice that there's this CSS class validation error. I've gone into the site.css file, and down at the bottom, I've created this class validation error where I've just specified that the font weight is bolder and the color is red. So it will really stand out when there are validation errors. Another thing that I've done is, as we go down through here, so I've added a password validation required field validator, and specified that the text mode is password. And then here in the confirm password box, I've added a compare validator. Notice I haven't added a required field validator. It's not really necessary because the user will have to enter a password. If they don't, they'll get the password as a required field validation error. And then if they don't enter anything in the confirm password box, then the compare validator will throw an exception, or not really an exception, but will fail to validate because it doesn't match the value in the password box. So we don't really need a required field validator there. Another trick that I've implemented is here where the user enters the email address. So if we look at this in design mode, you'll note that I have a required field validator because email is required, but then once they've entered it, we want the regular expression to confirm that they've entered an actual email address. And we need both, because if they don't enter anything in that text box, then the regular expression validator will not fail to validate. So if we look at design mode, you'll note that we have required and invalid, but as I mentioned, these both take up space even if they're not displayed, so the invalid message will be shifted over to the right, and that's not really what I want. So what I've done is, you'll notice here I've added this little style element where I've basically just set up a relative position. I've just changed the alignment by a couple of pixels and then pushed that message, this validator message, over to the left by 80 pixels. So that when we run it, if it's invalid, the invalid message will appear just to the right of the text box where the required field validator message would appear if that field was empty. So just a little UI trickery that improves the aesthetics and the behavior just a little bit. Of course, we've added the security question and a little bit of message that says leading and trailing spaces will be automatically removed. Right? And that's a behavior I think that most folks expect, but we just specify just in case somebody tried to do something clever like putting a space at the beginning of their username or what have you. If we go into design mode, notice we also have a label here for the create result message. And then we have this button. Oh, by the way, if you're building this along with me, this button is particularly styled by virtue of another style that I've added here. So button and button hover, just a couple of additional styles. And then I've applied those styles to that button so that they will match the look and feel of the default template. Right, so I did that, and I have a little behavior, mouse over and on mouse over and on mouse out. Right, so that's just that's not generated by default. That's just a little additional feature that I added to make that button look like the rest of the form. And in fact, if you check out my blog at misfitgeek.com, that code is posted there. So the next thing that we need to do is to generate the click event handler for the submit button. So if we do that, then we have our click event handler in code behind. And here in code behind, we have to write the code that actually will create the user account. But before we do that, we want to validate all of the data that's been entered. So the first thing we want to do is check and make sure that all of the validators passed validation. So we can say if page is valid, then we're going to do our own semantic validation and then create the user. So what we're going to do here is, so I can do anything special that I want to here. I can check the values against known issues relative to business logic. I could perhaps go and see if the user had a Gravatar registered on the Gravatar site or what have you. In our case, what we're going to do is just get the form fields and start to process the create request. So what we're going to do here is, let's say membership create status So we're going to create a variable to hold the status of whether or not the create user method call was successful or not. Now we're going to retrieve all of the values from the form fields that are necessary to create the user. So we'll say start with sUsername equal text box username. And of course we want to retrieve the text property. And I'm going to do this for each of the fields. So password, email, and question and answer. And now we can try and create the user. So we'll say membership dot create user. And notice that there are four overloads. I'm going to choose one of the more complex versions because I want to be able to specify that the user is not approved by default. So I want to create the user, as I mentioned earlier, create the user as unapproved so they can't log in until after some approval step takes place. So here what I need to do is I need to pass in each of these parameters, but I'm going to encode them to make sure that the user hasn't done anything malicious. So I'm going to call HTTP utility.html encode and pass in sUsername. And you remember that we specified a message in our form saying that leading and trailing spaces would be removed. So I'm going to trim that before I pass it to the encoder. And now I'm going to do this for each of the fields that we're going to pass in. So rather than you have to watch me type, I'll do that really quickly, and then we can continue. Now we can specify that we don't want the user to be created as activated by default. And then the last thing for this method signature is we need to specify where the status should be returned, right? So we said that's going to be this object right here, and since this is an out parameter, we have to specify that it's an out parameter. So at this point, we will have called the create user method, and we'll have a status that tells us whether or not we were successful or for some reason things failed. Now, at this point, you might be saying, well, wait a minute, we did form validation, so what sorts of things could cause it to fail other than sort of catastrophic failures like the database not being available? But in fact, we haven't validated the implementation-specific details for membership. So, for example, as you recall, we can set in the web.config file, we can set things like, what's the minimum password length? Well, it's set to 6 by default. What if the user only entered 5? We didn't check for that in our form validation, but create user will fail because the password that was entered is invalid based on the minimum requirements, right? Same with minimum number of alpha of non-alphanumeric characters, etc. So, we're going to need to handle this create status return value appropriately. So the first thing is, I want a string that will hold a message. And this message we'll use to display to our user. So you recall in the form, down here we had this label create result message. Well, that's where we'll populate whatever ends up in this string. Now, the create status object that we specified as the out parameter will contain the status of our request, our method call, create user. So what we want to do is let's switch on create status and we could test the status is what I'm going to do since I is just convert the status to a string and compare the string in my case statements. So I can say, for example, case success and here I will simply say this message equal the user was successfully created and then we'll break from the case statement. Now, I want to create a case statement for each of the possible results from the create user method. So I'm going to go away for a second. I'm going to do that and I'll be right back. So I've added a case statement for each of the possible results. And notice that these are results that could be returned from the membership system. So the password question is not formatted correctly, the password is not formatted correctly, et cetera, et cetera. The email address already exists in the database for the application, so that might appear if we specified that the user couldn't use duplicate email addresses in their registration. Now that we've done all of this work, however, we need to do something and process the result. So, first let's say if create status is not equal to membership create status dot success, so that's the enumeration for the create status type. Then we're going to specify that the CSS class for that label that we're going to specify the message in should be equal to that validation error. So remember this CSS class. So that'll make that box red if there was an error. And then we're going to say div result message dot visible equal true. Now if you're going, whoa, what just happened? Back in our form, we have this div result message. So this is a div that will appear to display a message whether things were successful or not successful. But when the page first renders, we don't have a message to display. So I've specified that this div, even though this is an HTML div, I've specified run at server so that I can have server behaviors, and I've specified visible equal false. So by default, it's not visible. Right? This won't even be, this label won't be shown, nor will the spacing be shown. Right? But now that we've processed and retrieved results, I'm going to say that's equal to true, and I'm going to continue to say that button add user is visible. setting the CSS class for that label. Okay. Else, right, so we're saying, if the create request was not successful, do this stuff. Else, it was successful, let's do this stuff. So what we're going to do is we're going to set the CSS class equal to bold, because we're going to have some sort of a success message. We're going to set the result visible equal true, so we want the user was successfully created message to appear, but we're going to set the button equal to false, because we don't want them to try to submit the same user twice. And then the last thing we need to do is whatever the result, whatever happened, we've displayed that div. So notice we've displayed that div in either case. So in fact, we could just say, let's put this down here and let's get rid of that. We're going to display that div no matter what. And then we're going to make sure that we display that message. So let's set the text property of that message, that label, equal to whatever our message was. Okay, so what we're saying is, just quickly to review, when the user clicks on the add user button, we're going to check if the page passed all validation. We're going to retrieve the values from all the form fields and create a status object to hold the results of our create user method. Then in membership, we're going to call the create user method, passing in the user's information, saying we don't want to create that user as activated by default. If I set this to true, they would be activated by default. And then we're saying that the result is going to be in the create status object. We're going to have a string for a message that we start with as empty. Then we're going to switch on the create status object's string value, determine whether we succeeded or failed by specifying the message that we're ultimately going to display to the user. Then we're going to check the success status, and if the user was not successfully created, set the CSS class and keep the button visible. If the user was successfully created, we'll again set the CSS class to something normal and disable the button so they won't see it, so they can't submit twice. And then whatever the message was, whether it was success or failure, we're going to populate that into the result message label and display the div that contains it. So that's it. So now, if we run, notice here's our form. If we try and submit our form, we get all this messaging. We're not, however, picking up the CSS. So let's go look and see what that issue is. So I just had to stop and start the server. Sometimes the Visual Studio's web server doesn't get shut down in between test runs, so the CSS file didn't get refreshed, so I just shut that down, reloaded in the browser, and clicked on the page refresh, and then we got the validation CSS as we'd expect. So here I can add a username. Let's add a password. I'm going to add a really short password, and then I'm not going to confirm it. And then here I'm going to add an invalid email address, and I'll add a question and answer. Click Create Your Account. Notice tells us that's not a valid email address. Let's go ahead and do that. Notice now it tells us that the password is not formatted correctly. And that is a result of our minimum password requirement. Notice also, if I enter different passwords, they fail to match. So if I add a valid password, now I can successfully create a user. And there's our message. Right, so one more thing that we would want to do that I didn't do in this form, I'll just point out to you, is that in this confirm, the confirm password, in addition to the compare validator, we'll also want to add a required field validator. But here you can see that we can either use the wizard or we can create a custom field. Now, some of the things we might do in a custom form, for example, maybe one of the things that we want to do is when they enter their email address, maybe we want to validate that email address against either a call a web service and confirm it's not a known spamming address, or maybe we want to call the Gravatar web service and retrieve their Gravatar image. The point here is that you have the flexibility to use either the create user wizard control, which is highly configurable and programmable, or to use the method call if API level programming is your preference, to create a form that looks and works exactly the way that you want, and then in your code behind in C# or Visual Basic, call the membership create user method as part of your code behind. So now we've started creating users. In the next video, we'll take a look at different ways that we can log the user in after they've been successfully created.